Hey, what's going on? I'm Ryan Panagos, a.k.a. Marvel's Agent M, and you are listening to Mighty Marvel Geeks.
USB microphones and headphones provided by CAD Audio. CAD Audio, expression through innovation.
Forgive the interruption, but I believe this requires your attention.
Meanwhile, at the above-ground underwater suborbital volcano lair...
This is urgent. We need a response team.
We're already putting together the best man. With all due respect, sir, so am I.
I have a plan.
It's a plan. It's real!
Mighty Marvel Geeks.
That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team.
Team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos. We're a time bomb.
Well then, son, you've got a condition.
Your show about all things Marvel with Mike, Kylan, and Eric.
What a bunch of losers. I am Groot.
That I did know.
These people may be isolated, unbalanced even, but I believe with the right push, they can do exactly what we need.
Suit up. I'm bringing the party to you.
I have indeed been uploaded, sir. We're online and ready.
And welcome to another issue of Mighty Marvel Geeks. It's Mike and Kylan this week.
Hey!
S.H.I.E.L.D. has sent Eric to the lodge. So,
yeah.
Fortunately, Wi-Fi is not that strong up there. And yeah. So it's going to make it a little tough for him this week. But he did manage, I guess he got ahead far enough notice that was happening. He pre-recorded his picks of the week for us, though.
Thoughtful guy, that is.
So... how have you been? How's it been since last week?
It's been good. I got my Power Man and Iron Fist I liked that, Marvel feature fight added Luke Cage's new costume to the game. So I thought that was cool.
And speaking of feature fight, three new characters.
Yeah, Kamala Khan,
Jane Foster, Thor.
And I ended up getting both of them. Usually you have to build up to that stuff. I won the lottery this week.
I'm having to do the daily thing for Khan.
Right.
Thor, I haven't gotten anything for that. I did pick her with my, with the gift that you get when you get the free chest.
Right.
But Carnage, at the moment, the only way you get him is if you subscribe.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? No.
That's a sneaky way of doing that, you know?
Yeah. At the end of the month, you get him. That's cold.
That is, and I was just like, hey, you know, I had a ton of jewels, and so I've been saving up, and then I finally just gave in, and I got the all-new, all-different Captain America uniform for Falcon.
Okay.
And then, as soon as I get it, then all of a sudden they start revealing the all-new, all-different Luke Cage, and I'm just like...
What did I just do?
Yes. Like, really? It's almost like somebody was sitting there just waiting for me to just go and spend it all. And they're like, oh, hey, guess what we got for you now? Oh, you used all your jewels.
Oh, wait. Carnage is what? Is he a blast?
Combat. Let me look. He may be combat.
He's
either combat or speed.
Because I just logged into Future Fight so I could get my character, my Kamala for today.
Right.
My two biometrics. And I got my free chest and it gave me combat.
Yeah, he's a combat.
And guess what? He does not show up in the pick for that.
He doesn't?
No. Looking at it right now. Not there.
Not there.
So I'll pick Kamala instead.
There you go.
But I don't even know where you go to subscribe to this.
I don't either. I didn't even realize the subscription was a thing for this.
Yeah, I didn't either. And it's boggling because I'm at that stage just as I get every character, they do this other. Okay, subscription package. What's subscription package? Shop. I don't get it. I don't see anything on here that says subscription package.
Mm-hmm.
Because it says subscription package.
Right? Type. I don't know, but...
I don't see anything. That's the whole thing. It's like, where is it?
Unless it's something that's coming up.
I don't know. I just hit on it for store, and it doesn't show. Package. There's Kamala. There's Thor. There is no other package for subscription. Oh, there it is. Get 20 biometrics daily. It's $10.
20 biometrics daily, though?
Ooh. Yeah. Tempting. Very tempting. So,
so yeah, that's been my week.
I've been playing this. What else has been going on? No, of course, I've been busy with work and busy with trying to get guests on the show. And we've got some lined up. We'll see what happens with that.
Right.
But you know, let's kind of delve into a little. Oh, of course, it's going to freeze up. No. How about some Agent Carter recap? As I play the theme again, hold on. We can't stop that abruptly.
No, because the Agent... See?
Such a great song, too.
It really is.
And it sounds so odd considering it's a period piece. This isn't what you expect.
No, it's not.
And this was done by Bear McCreary, right?
I think. Well, it definitely sounds like a Bear McCreary piece.
I have reached out to him.
Oh, dude.
Because
the funny thing is, I think a lot of people first fell in love with Bear McCreary's work for
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Was it S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I know he did Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
He did Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He did the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yeah.
But my first exposure to him and his music just really stuck in my head was for, it was a show based on a character from our competition, Human Target.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did the first season. And then the second season, they made some cuts. And then he went on to something else. And you could tell the difference. The music just wasn't the same.
Yeah,
But I love Bear McCreary. Stuff awesome. So
I have reached out to his people, so hopefully we'll get him into the underwater suborbital volcano lair
there
at some
go.
Point soon. Hey, so
we'll buy him lunch at the commissary.
The commissary.
So
since we brought up the Agent Carter theme, let's recap this past week's episodes.
Okay. So we double fisted it this week. We got two episodes of Agent Carter. I believe we had episodes
6 and 7, I think.
Episodes 6 and 7. And it picks up right where everything left off last week.
Yeah. And of course, these episodes are titled Life of the Party and Monsters.
Yes. Now, Life of the Party centers around, just like every good spy story, has a high society party ball kind of thing. Every good one has that. And we get that in this one, okay?
For the fortitude.
And you know... you know, we realize that, you know, they're sitting there and they're making their plans to how are we going to, who can we get to infiltrate this party whose face has not been seen, because everybody has seen Agent Carter and pretty much everybody has seen everybody on the show for the most part. But then they're sitting there, they put their heads together and they're like, and then Peggy's like, I have the worst idea ever. I have the craziest idea ever. And then we're in a nondescript prison cell or jail cell, and we're talking to our favorite agent from the Red Room. Okay,
right?
Yeah. So you know, and in this episode, we got more gadgets. I have to admit that is something that I like this season. We actually got some gadgets because you figured that if you're a high level spy agency, you're supposed to have gadgets.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it was cool because we got to see that this time. And so we have Jarvis, and we have, oh gosh, I can't think of her name now.
Peggy?
No, Betty. Betty. So we have Betty and Jarvis. And Jarvis, is a bit upset because he finds out that he's not going to be given a gun. Although he at least would like to have a sword cane. I understand that, but he doesn't even get a sword cane. But by the same token, he was just standing next to the woman and she took his watch. He didn't even know it. So, so we'll fast forward to the ball, and so they're equipped with, well, our agents are equipped with glasses. Well, Jarvis has glasses that act as a communication device. They can both, they're a two-way device. And then Betty has a hat that does the same thing, and they're dancing around and they're telling Sousa and Peggy what they're observing. And then they get a familiar face. And their plan, which seemed at least almost foolproof, proves to not be. Oh, and I guess we should back up a little bit, because they're going to this party because they need to get a skin sample from our... she's not Madam Mask, but she's Madam Mask at this point.
Yeah.
You know, she's not, but she is.
I still think the Zero Matter is the precursor to the symbiote.
The way it's acting, it is. The way it acts, it is. And it's interesting the way it interacts, because with the scientist, he can take it in and it stabilizes him,
right?
But then on the other hand, Madam Mask can use it to absorb any and everything, but when she tries to absorb him, he starts taking it from her. So which is something that's touched on in this episode. So we end up seeing that the Council of Eight are at this party,
right?
And they have a meeting. They convene, and they attempt to take Madam Mask hostage for themselves. And
now, of course, this is us calling her Madam Mask.
Yeah. They're not calling her that in the show, but in my head, that's who she is, because she pretty much is at this point. But now, here's my question. Now, understand that bad guys aren't always the smartest, but you just saw this woman consume a mouse in her hand. So what makes you think that she's not going to be able to defend herself if you're using choke rods on her? Just saying.
Things that make you go, what?
Because, she does that, so they do that, and then the woman just snaps, and then you realize that she's learned to just pretty much absorb whomever she wants without having to touch him now.
Which is funny, because I know this isn't a story we're covering this week, because I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but it kind of ties in now.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much of her could be related to absorbing man who is coming back in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Wow. Well, that's true, because, we don't really know a whole lot about him.
Right. All of a sudden, here's this gal, Madam Mask, doing all this, and yet...
See, that,
I know, I do that so often.
But the thing is, I was assumed prior to that they would make him inhuman, but see, with the way this stuff is acting, it's weird, because it's kind of like a symbiote, but it's kind of tied to the whole inhuman thing. I don't know.
It's just one of those things that makes you go, exactly.
And so, of course, things don't go smoothly. And Betty ends up being captured, and the Order of Eight, or the Organization of Eight, ends up getting cut by half, over half.
And so
we now have a new crime boss, and I'm pretty sure that we have that Masters is working for Hydra. Pretty sure of that. That's because we know from something that was said. We have to go back to last season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I think so.
That, you know, Hydra has its agents within the United States government for a very long time. So we're waiting to see. I'm just waiting for that card to be flipped. So then we also get we get Masters basically saying that we need Agent Carter to be her credibility to be destroyed.
Right.
So that is where we are with our first hour. So now we get to the second hour, and the episode's called Monsters. And the reason why is that we get to see the interaction between our favorite scientist who's sort of a ghost, but because of the containment field that he built is working, and so he's able to be present in this world.
Right.
Although at this point we're not sure that he can leave. And then we also have Anna. No, not Anna. I can't think of her name. Oh, the one I'm calling Madam Mask. And we have her who is on a search because she knows that some of her essence had been taken. And so now we see Jason is he's starting to kind of snap a little bit. Like, I don't know, like his sanity is starting to get a little frazzled. No, because he's basically living between two worlds. Because he's phasing out and he's coming back, but he's now grounded in this world, at least temporarily.
Right.
So then we have that, and then we have Rose, that's her name. Rose ends up finding him, and she tries to. We see that she decides that she's going to try, and I don't know if she thinks that she's going to try and absorb him, but she discovers that when her zero matter touches his skin absorbs it and pulls. It starts pulling from her, and she tries to pull away and can't until she just finally breaks the connection, which solidifies Jason even more. And it gets to the point that Jason, it seems like there's going to be a fight because Rose now has a new boyfriend who looks like more Magia muscle. And he comes out. So Jason comes out. Looks like there's going to be a bit of a fight. But then Rose conks him in the back of the head, knocking him out. And Anna, Jarvis's wife, is still, she was there at the mansion with Jason. And they're having dinner and drinks and talking. And so as Jarvis and Peggy are coming back, with Betty in tow, she's knocked out in the trunk. Once they pull up to the front of the Stark compound, I guess is what we call it, we see Rose shoot Anna and take off with Jason. And Anna is taken to the hospital. We don't know her state because she's unconscious. And next thing you know, we hear that the policeman who had been ordered by Betty to watch the car, ordered by Peggy to watch the car, her car has been shot and the trunk is open and Betty is gone. So basically, things are really bad right now. Peggy is pretty much, and by the way, Sousa is now more or less forced vacation by Masters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's some really bad things going on right now. We have three episodes left, and I can't wait to see how this is going to end. And I have a real sad because this is going to be it for a really good show.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be curious to see how they change it up. At the moment, there's still no word on whether Agent Carter is going to be renewed or not, especially with Haley Atwell taking on a new position, a new pilot that's waiting to get picked up. So,
I mean, can you see? What does your gut tell you about? Does your gut tell you that this may be it? I mean, are the numbers really that bad for Agent Carter, or is this just a bunch of haters that for some reason just don't like the show?
Supposedly the numbers are lower. So,
but you know, the thing is, I still think that people come into Agent Carter, and I think they come into every Marvel property wanting superheroes, and this is in the cinematic universe. As far as we know, the earliest superhero that you get is Captain America. After Captain America is going to be Ant-Man, but Ant-Man really doesn't show up until the early 60s.
Yeah, according to the movie.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. We know Agent Carter dies in Civil War.
Right.
At this point in time, does the show become relevant if the character's dead in the future films and carrying the TV series?
No, but you know, I still want to know the stories about the early days of S.H.I.E.L.D.
We're not even there yet.
No, we're
still SSR.
Right.
This is why I said last week and kind of flabbergasted everyone. If you were going to drop Peggy Carter, let's move up. Mm-hmm. Let's find someone who looks like a younger Sam Jackson and do Sergeant Fury in the Sergeant Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D.
I agree.
And start it off that way.
I would love to see that because I would like to think that the early S.H.I.E.L.D. Strike Force, I'm going to go there. The early S.H.I.E.L.D. Strike Force had to be the Howling Commandos, or at least some iteration of them.
And then you get my Howling Commando show.
See, you know,
it's all in the
plans. Connected. So yeah, that's what I want.
We'll tell you what. Let me break down the best moments of the biggest moments of this week's two episodes of Agent Carter.
Please do.
Of course, this list comes to us from MCUExchange.com. This is what they highlight. And a lot of this I agree with, or I wouldn't be using their breakdown. They have as number one, Black Widow returns. So is that what we're calling her? The Dottie Underwood character? Is she the first black? Is she Black Widow?
Well, you know that. Did you notice her dress?
Yes.
And it's very similar to that 1960s widow dress.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Just saying.
Number two, the Dark Force Awakens. I see what they did there. I see what they did there.
Yes.
Once Dottie secures the blood, she stumbles into the council meeting room to avoid its members. Mm-hmm. But she finds this is also where we find that Whitney not only has more control over her abilities, but they're more powerful than anyone expected. So, and then they say with the Dark Force's existing ties to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and its future connection to Doctor Strange, we're likely to see fleshed out even more on this show and in the return, in a return of it in future episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D. Again, why would you bring back Absorbing Man if you're not going to possibly tie this in?
Right.
Another big moment was candid conversations. And what they're talking about is most people wouldn't exclaim that, but it's what makes a TV show great. Honest human interactions between characters, no matter how fantastical their circumstances. And they bring up, for example, like a conversation Peggy has with Jarvis about the affections of Jason and Sousa.
Mm-hmm.
Or Sousa, yeah.
Yes.
So,
which, you know, that's one of the things I love about Marvel is you have real conversations like that. You could be in the middle of a very stressful situation and to just kind of sort of give your brain a break.
Right.
You know?
Another big moment. Anna got shot.
Yes.
So, that's pretty much the big moments of the two episodes. So let's, next week, we'll recap those two episodes, which, the edge of mystery and a little song and dance. So, and we'll have to see what happens from there. I'm going to say, from here, let's, I kind of mentioned it, trying to find my story. We're going to continue on with TV real quick before we really hit the Deadpool coverage. Because, we got a lot of Deadpool to cover.
Oh, yeah.
And I have totally lost my story.
Oh.
But it's okay, because it's about to come up. I can get my computer to operate right. Jarvis, why are you messing with me? he does this to me all the time. You know that.
Well, you know, it's because he has a weird sense of humor, and he picks the best times to, to show his personality. Come on, Jarvis.
Here we go.
Thank you.
No, that's not it.
No?
He is messing with me big time.
You are not authorized to access this area.
Yes, I am, Jarvis. Check your files again. Here we go.
Yay. Thank you, Jarvis.
So, apparently, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we've talked about, you know, the possibility of absorbing man coming back. We're also starting to see more of Secret Warriors, which I said that too. Yeah, we're getting the Mockingbird spinoff Most Wanted. I think we need a Secret Warrior spinoff as well.
We do.
And the reason why I say that is Natalia Cordova Buckley has joined Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the role of Elena Rodriguez. That name sound familiar to you?
Just a bit.
If you don't know who she is, she's an inhuman with super speed, and the character is described as a streetwise Colombian woman based on the character Slingshot, who was created by Jonathan Hickman and Stefano Caselli's Secret Warriors run.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the comics, the character goes by her nickname Yo-Yo Rodriguez. She joins Daisy Johnson's Secret Warriors team after being recruited to Nick Fury's Anti-Skrull Task Force. You know, that's another group I would love to see show up, is Skrull.
Oh, yeah, but see, the problem is, aren't the Skrulls tied to...
Yeah, I think they are tied to X-Men or
Fantastic Four.
Okay, but for the sake of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the MCU, the Kree Anti-Kree Task Force, since the Skrull has been turned to Kree. See, there's always a way around. So Daisy's team already has two members currently on the show. It's Lincoln, who generates electricity, and Joey, who he melts everyone's hearts. Well, he just melts everything. However, they didn't come together as a team until season 3, mid-season finale. With the casting of Cordova Buckley's, it may signal more of a concentrated recruitment effort on S.H.I.E.L.D.'s part when the series returns. A Mexican-born actress, she's also known for her roles in McFarland USA and L.A.E. El Candido and Ventanas Al Mar. So, I mean, this sounds pretty cool that we're getting closer to the possible reality of Secret Warriors series if this continues the way it looks like. So
I think that'd be I think that they're going back the right way. You know, they're kind of, you know, they're dipping their toes into the pool of full on superhero superpowers, and you know, and kind of bringing it in a more logical way than
right
you know, hey, superheroes, you know.
But you know what? I think I'm going to go ahead and start off the Deadpool talk with this interesting story.
All right, cool.
Only because, you know, I've been one of the ones to bring up why, you know, the legal issues of what can be talked about, what can't be talked about.
Right.
Apparently, during the big climactic battle scene in the third act of Deadpool, he finds himself face to face with an old colleague named Bob. Mm-hmm. Bob, you say? For the most part, this comes across as a silly moment in a long line of silly moments in the film. But it's actually a special moment for those who have followed Deadpool and might reference a frequent companion or adversary to Deadpool that maybe they just didn't have the rights to.
Maybe.
And Bob could be, from the comics, Bob, agent of Hydra. But how can that be? Any agent of Hydra would belong to Marvel Studios.
Mm-hmm, that is right.
So, given that Marvel Studios owns the rights to the evil organization Hydra, this means that 20th Century Fox did not legally include Bob, agent of Hydra, in Deadpool. This technicality didn't really wind up slowing down producers or writers, however. as they revealed in an interview before the movie's release that they couldn't technically use Bob, but they found a way to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Explained Paul Wernick, or Wernick, because that's why he's just called Bob. Mm-hmm. The hardcore fans will go, oh my god, is that Hydra Bob? But the lawyers at Marvel won't go, wait, that's Hydra Bob. They don't have the rights to it. We did take some liberties. Fox has a list of characters that they own and that we can use, and Simon Ginberg, who is also a producer on the project, is a keeper of the X universe. He was also a great source for us in knowing what we can and what we can use, how it's going to play into the larger story and overall arching stories of the X universe. So between Simon and Legal, they kind of guided us to what we can and can't do to have access to. And then it's up to us to see how we're going to use these characters creatively once we knew what we really did have the rights. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, watching the scene, now I will say that when it comes to Deadpool, I would say I'm probably a brown belt, so I don't know.
Better a brown belt than brown pants.
That's true. Although Deadpool seems to be quite a fan of brown pants.
For the same reason why he wears red.
Exactly. So the scene held some significance for me, because I thought, even though that's one of those random crazy moments, I still felt like that there was something going on there that I may have been missing. And so to find out that Bob, Agent of Hydra, which was a comic that you picked, was it back during the summer when this series ran?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that Hydra Bob featured into the Deadpool universe, which made that scene even more special for me. So, that was one of those things I thought was really cool. It was sly the way that they did it, in that it was just enough for the really hardcore fans who were in on the joke to be, hey, but at the same time, loose enough of an interpretation that the attorneys didn't have to go,
Hey,
you know, so it was, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So, well, let's continue on with some Deadpool. Let's talk about this first weekend.
Oh, this first weekend was insane. Let's go back to the weekend numbers first, because I have also, I do have the numbers up to
Thursday the 18th.
Yeah. Up to Thursday the 18th. But, you know, Deadpool broke some serious records, okay? We're talking about, it broke a record for the highest grossing rated R movie over President's Day weekend. I think Friday, according to the numbers, Friday to Sunday, it was $132.7 million. As according to this, it basically tied with the inflation-adjusted Matrix Reloaded debut. But numbers-wise, it was still higher.
Right.
It was the first rated R opening to cross 100 million plus mark. The biggest February debut, the 8th biggest non-summer debut of all time, and the 17th biggest opening weekend in history. This movie beat Star Wars in Russia, okay?
Well, that's because Russia doesn't know. Never mind. Russia doesn't know. Russia. Oh, sorry.
I'm like, this movie was, I mean, I think at the end of, but would it come Monday morning, the domestic and international was over 300 million. We're talking about a movie that was expected to get maybe 60 million, maybe.
Yeah. The weekend take was 132,434,000. Okay, let's mm-hmm. just say 132.4 million.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The foreign take for the same time period was 153 mil with, can I sort this by total gross? Probably not. Nope, it's not giving me total that. Its budget was only 58 mil.
Right.
And it's done domestically 180 mil. That's almost, well, that's just over triple its budget.
Yes.
So, I mean, yeah.
And I know, and I have to say, because it's been over a week, and I'm gonna apologize if I'm about to throw out a spoiler. I apologize to everyone, but it makes that joke about, you know, with the mansion as big as it is, you think you would see more X-Men than just you two. And then he looks at the screen and says, it's almost like the movie company didn't have the budget.
Yeah.
Or like the movie company ran out of money. And, you know, because apparently there was supposed to have been 7 X-Men, but then they cut the budget. And so we ended up with 2.
Oh, well, Reynolds was ruthless on this film. I mean, he really was.
Well, you know, this was the movie that was almost like, was it the little engine that could, although people didn't think it would?
Yeah, something like that.
You know.
The little engine that shouldn't.
Yeah, and the thing was, you couldn't stop the Deadpool train. And I will say that it's not because all of a sudden Deadpool is the darling of the day. The thing is, Deadpool is a popular character, has been a popular character, and will be a popular character for years to come. And people have wanted this movie for 10 plus years. They've wanted this movie. And after the terrible version that was given to us in Wolverine.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was a long time coming, and here we are. But see, the other thing is, people have to realize, now I'm going to say this here, and I think you will agree with me. The movie isn't getting these kinds of numbers just because it's rated R or just because it goes there. The thing is, this movie was made by fans for fans, and it's people who genuinely love the character, and you have a great story, great writing, people who truly understand the character.
Right.
And that's why this movie is successful. That's why this movie could not be, this movie would not have these numbers if it was PG-13, because Deadpool is not a PG-13 character.
Well, I find it interesting that you bring that up. With the R rating, with it being successful, mm-hmm. Fox is now saying the next Wolverine movie is going to be rated R.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Let's talk about that, because I want to know, what do you think about it, considering, you know, for the since 2000, every version of Wolverine that we've seen on the big screen has been a PG-13 version.
Right. I think.
What do you think?
Well, I think James Gunn pretty much said it best with the Deadline article, and he kind of brings it up like, well, "What about me?" let me see if I can find it. He slams Deadline for the fact that it's, you know, they make this article making it Deadpool seem like, oh, this was such a creative original idea with what they did with the trailers, and it's like, hello, I did the same thing with Guardians, and look how everyone has tried to make movies similar to Guardians or the trailers and whatnot similar to the Guardians trailer ever since.
Right.
It's almost the same way now. Ooh, now that Deadpool has opened up the doors to being rated R and being successful, or being a rated R comic book movie, now maybe we need to pursue this. Hello, let's go back to Time Cop.
Yes.
Let's go back to Dredd. Not Judge Dredd, but Dredd. Blade. All
Punisher.
Three of them. Punisher. Both of them.
Tank Girl.
I mean,
there's been so many successful comic book rated R movies. Oh, how about, and these are two that the people who don't watch comic book movies, this is going to blow your minds. How about History of Violence and Road to Perdition? Both comic books, both right. Graphic novels. Just saying.
Watchmen.
Right.
I mean, there's others. But here's the story. I just found it. James Gunn goes hard after Hollywood insiders confused about Deadpool's success. And this just goes to prove the geek revolution. Well, okay, I just now realized I'm on the wrong show. Weeby Geeks, in which we tout over there, is the voice of the geek revolution, or your official voice. We kind of touch on this over there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the people who aren't in the know, or the hipsters, the bandwagoners, mm-hmm. wagoneers who, oh, this is awesome. they don't look at the whole big picture. They don't look at history. And as James Gunn, you know, as this article goes, Hollywood's insiders are confused about the success. One anonymous insider after another scratched their heads over how Deadpool beat the odds. Sort of like Ant-Man.
It's a good story. That's, I don't get it.
One suit, literally how the person is described in the article had this to say. The film has a self-depreciating tone that is riotous. It's never been done before. It's poking fun at Marvel. That label takes itself so seriously. Can you imagine them making fun of themselves in a movie? They rather stab themselves. Yes, they do know. Because the character makes fun of Marvel in the comics.
Yes, all the time. It's not...
James Gunn is having none of this person's gruff. Taking to Facebook, Gunn savaged the industry insiders who will no doubt try and replicate the success of Deadpool without realizing what actually made the film click for audiences. In a no-hold-barred essay, Gunn takes Hollywood to task for continuously missing the point of its film and lobotomizing them to repackage and resell, only to be frustrated when these fall short of the material they're trying to duplicate. So, as he posted on Monday, the 15th, he goes, the film has a self-depreciating tone that's riotous. It's never been done before. It's poking fun at Marvel, that label. And that's him quoting. The whole tirade is, the label takes itself so seriously, that's a quote from Deadline Hollywood, attributing to a Hollywood suit. I love Deadpool, and I get a lot of my film business news from Deadline. Well, from them, speaking of Deadline. And of course, this is James Gunn talking. And I love Deadpool even more. The film is hilariously funny, has lots of heart, and exactly what we need right now, taking true risks in spectacle film. But then there's an explicit, but come on. Yeah. When I paraphrase, but come on. That's no reason to rewrite history. Right. This quote has to have been said by the dumbest Hollywood exec, and I'm leaving out some choice words. if you want to know what these words are, check out the first page of Alias, because it's the very first word, too. So.
Yes. See, you know...
It's all connected.
See, just to say, I don't understand.
I'm not even a fourth of the way through this. He goes, this quote has to have been said by the dumbest Hollywood exec in the history of dumb Hollywood execs. Let's ignore Guardians for a moment, a movie that survives from moment to moment, building itself up and cutting itself down. God knows I'm biased about that one. But what do you think Favreau and Downey did with Iron Man?
Exactly.
And what was Ant-Man? I mean, come on, Deadline. After every movie smashes records, people here in Hollywood love to throw out the definitive reasons why the movie was a hit. I saw it happen with Guardians. Of course, we also saw it happen with Star Wars, Force Awakens. It wasn't afraid to be fun, or was it colorful or funny, etc., etc., etc. Next thing I know, I hear 100 film projects being set up like Guardians, and I start seeing dozens of trailers exactly like the Guardians trailer with a big pop song and a bunch of quips. Ugh, 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 ugh. God, I feel like I'm reading the book with no pictures. Deadpool wasn't that. Deadpool was its own thing, which I agree. Yes. That's what people are reacting to. It's original. It's good. It was made from love by the filmmakers that wasn't afraid to take risks, which is part of what was great about the first Iron Man film. They weren't afraid to take risks, especially with that character. And it was made from love. I mean, you could tell Favreau gave it love. That's what I've liked about the Captain America stories.
Yes.
It's almost true to the origin story. It's almost true to the Winter Soldier story. Of course, there are some liberties with it, and it's been modernized for Hollywood. This is what I'm hoping to get with Civil War. Obviously, they can't use mutant registration, but you know what? X-Men Last Stand kind of ruined that whole concept.
That's true, it did.
So, anyhow, to get back to this, it was made with love by the filmmakers, and it wasn't afraid to take risks. For the theatrical experience to survive, spectacle films need to expand their definition of what they can be. They need to be unique and true voices of the filmmakers behind them. They can't just be copying what came before them. So now, over the next few months, if you pay attention to the trades, you'll see Hollywood misunderstanding the lesson that they should be learning with Deadpool. They'll be greenlighting films like Deadpool, they won't mean good and original, but a raunchy superhero film, or it breaks the fourth wall that treats you like, oh, and Kick-Ass was another R-rated one.
True. Both of them.
They treat you like, go ahead.
Oh, and also Kingsman, another rated R comic movie.
Was that rated R?
Yeah.
Okay. tells you how much. I'm 45. I don't pay attention to the ratings anymore.
Me neither. Sam Jackson get to say his favorite word in that movie, so you know.
Right. But they'll treat you like you're stupid, which is one thing Deadpool didn't do.
No.
But hopefully in the midst of all this, there'll be a studio or two that will take the right lesson from this, like Fox did with Guardians, by greenlighting Deadpool, and say, boy, maybe we could give them something they don't already have. So, and you know what? He pretty much called it, because within a day or two later, Fox came out and said, we're going to make Wolverine rated R. Does it need to happen? I don't think so.
No.
So this is me coming back around to my opinion on it. You're gonna alienate big time a large part of your audience if you turn Wolverine into an R-rated movie.
Right.
It's and the sad part is it's Fox themselves that are doing it.
True.
So now you're turning Wolverine from a superhero film into a hack and slash or a slasher movie. Well, what's the point at this point? What storyline are you going to do that is going to justify that much violence?
That's true. Wolverine has been featured in enough movies over the past 15 years that, you know, what good does it do to all of a sudden take the reins off of him now? It doesn't make sense.
Right. And the sad part is this announcement was made at New York Toy Fair, a toy convention. So what's this going to do? It's going to allow us to see Wolverine's claw actually cut through people instead of mysteriously passing through them without ever drawing a single drop of blood. Yeah, I don't buy it.
Right.
End of story.
Mm-hmm.
I will say I found an article and it pretty much confirmed something that you mentioned during last week's show, during your review of Deadpool. And that is the concept artist who worked on the film pretty much confirmed it was a helicarrier.
Yes.
And that the production team on Deadpool had to go out of their way to make it hard to tell. Because, again, legally they can't... they legally can't do a helicarrier.
Right.
So, that's pretty much going to wrap up the news for this week. I guess I could touch on this one briefly. Mm-hmm. Apparently on the Facebook page for Captain America Civil War, it has changed Cap's relationship status to, it is complicated, in a complicated relationship with Iron Man. Civil War is doing a pretty good job making this viral campaign on Facebook. So worth it. So I'm just going to leave it at that. I mean, between Friendship Day and then right before Valentine's Day, making it's complicated. It's something else. That's all that's going to be said.
I'm loving how I love how Facebook has gotten behind this, and you know that it's sort of become a little taken their part in the marketing of this movie. It's given us its own little lead in to Civil War, you know.
Well, it's that time. As we draw near the end of the show, we start off, you know, it's our picks, and of course we start off with Marvel Unlimited each week. Just a reminder, next week is our book club. and we will be discussing the book of the month, which is Star Wars, Heir to the Empire number 1. So again, communicate with us, folks. I think we had that with someone over the weekend asking about how to get in touch with us on Twitter. Let me find that post real quick, because this one should be easy to find, because it's just in my notifications. Let's see, we can skip the one from Sanford Green, because that's totally different. Did I just tease something?
Maybe a little bit.
Okay. Where did it go? Ah, here we go. This came from at GoofyFan_Chuck on Twitter. Do you take email, Twitter, or call-ins for your Marvel show on Saturday nights? He's talking about, this was sent to, Jeff Davis, host of DW60, which you can hear every week on, SR Radio, Sorcerer Radio. Now, of course, we replied back, yes, you can hit us up with any Marvel questions. Now, contact the show at mmg@webegeeks.net or call 321-219-8227. And again, for those of you in the South, 321-219-8227. Sorry. Having lived both in the South and the North. Northerners, I said that pretty slow to begin with. But people in the South, I might have said it a little too fast. So, yeah, I mean, we encourage the participation. Yeah, we want you to send us your picks of the week for the upcoming New Comic Book Day. We would love to hear your pick for a Marvel Unlimited pick. And, of course, we'll give you full credit for it, and we'll use that as your pick of the week instead of us. We want your feedback. Now, you send us your picks of the week for the upcoming New Comic Book Day, we'll add it to our list, official list. So, if there's nine picks and you pick one or two, we'll turn those into the 10th and 11th pick. That's why we're here. That's why we're here. So to continue on, remember, Star Wars Heir to the Empire number 1 is the book of the month. It'll be discussed next week on Book Club. My pick for this week, though, Hulk Gray number 1.
But okay, that doesn't it surprised me, but it doesn't surprise me because, well, you're a fan of the whole the red series, the white series. Spider-Man. Yeah, red was red Spider-Man. Yeah, because
I think it was Spider-Man blue.
Spider-Man's blue.
Daredevil's yellow. Cap's white.
Cap's white.
I don't think there's been a red yet.
No, I don't think there's been a red yet. So, I know that you've been a fan of those. So, Hulk Gray. Okay, good.
Captain America White ended a while ago. I was going to pick it up, and I decided I'm going to wait for the trade paperback because I'm going to end up getting these on trade paperback as well. Mm-hmm. But I can read Daredevil Yellow now. I can read Spider-Man Blue now. I can read Hulk Gray now. I'm Marvel Unlimited. So, the synopsis is, the critically acclaimed fan favorite creative team of Daredevil Yellow and Spider-Man Blue create another of their Marvel Spectrum stories, a tale of the Incredible Hulk before he was even green. So we're kind of going back. So he turned green with envy?
I like the fact that they acknowledged that he was gray and it wasn't just a bad color job, you know?
Now, of course, this was written, this was done by the team of Jeff Lieb and Tim Sale. So the story Bruce is telling takes place in The Incredible Hulk number 1. It starts off with Bruce talking to Doc Samson, and then tells Bruce the story, and then Bruce tells the story of his origin and his adventure when he was gray, not green. Bit of trivia, this 6-issue novel takes place after Betty's death.
Oh, okay.
So if that gives you an idea, this series came out, this issue came out December 2003, so it ran 2003-2004. So that's my pick for the week, and so that only means one thing left for this week. And that would be new new comic book picks of the week. This would be for July. Wow, I'm really jumping ahead. For February 24th. February 24th, the last Wednesday of February 2016. Mm-hmm. So let's start off with Eric's first, since he was kind to leave them behind for us, right. Not knowing whether the lodge was going to have Wi-Fi or not. So here's Eric's picks.
Hey guys, this is Eric. Greetings and salutations from our little outpost snugly nestled in the Albanian Alps. I bet you didn't know the Alps ran through Albania, did you? Well, they do, Einstein. Just problem is, they're not as much fun. They don't have as much chocolate. There aren't as many Swiss misses running around, and there's not quite as many Ricola. Well, maybe that's not a bad thing on the last part. But anyway, I told...
Was he at the Germany Beer Garden at Epcot?
Possibly.
Okay, well, we'll continue on.
Coulson, I was sneaking out for a quick smoke, but really what I'm doing is passing along my top three picks of the week for Wednesday, February 24th. Here we go. First one up is Hercules number 4.
What was that name again?
Hercules. My name is Hercules.
I think I prefer Wonder Boy.
Why does that name ring a bell?
I don't know. Maybe we owe money?
The uprising storm is sweeping in to destroy all remnants of the ancient world and its ways, and only Hercules stands in his path. Meanwhile, Herc has been pushing his buddy Gilgamesh to get off the couch and back into the hero business. Now Gil has finally stepped up and walked into a world of trouble. Hercules has got to save the world, but first, he's got to save his old friend from a miserable death. My second peek of the week is Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 4. Written by Amy Reeder and Brandon Montclair, a dinosaur loose in an elementary school. Somebody call for backup. Enter Amadeus Cho, the totally awesome Hulk slash Monster Hunter. But can Moon Girl's brains and Devil Dinosaur's brawn take down a Hulk? My third and final pick of the week is Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 5. It's the Howling Commandos versus Sphinx in the supernatural showdown you've been waiting for. Can the members of Stake hold on to their humanity when faced with a monstrous decision? With corruption in the ranks of Stake, who can the Commandos trust? Well, you can trust me to be back next week, so until then...
What do you say? It's happy ending time. Everybody's got a taste of something, but me, I got nothing. I'm here with nothing. Anybody listening? It's like, what am I, an echo or something? Hello? Hello? Am I talking to what? Hyperspace? Hello?
I think Eric just dropped the gauntlet on that one.
I think he did. Oh, man. Yeah. Okay.
Challenge's been laid out. So,
well,
to continue on, Kylan, your first pick for this week.
All right, well, my number one pick of the week is a number 6. All new, all different adventures. The writer is Mark Wade, and the penciler is Mahmoud Asrar. The villain pulling the Avengers string stands revealed. Someone who's been a part of Avengers history for almost all of the team's existence. In a way you've never seen them before. The all-new, all-different Avengers first story arc ends here, and you won't guess who's left standing on the last page.
Well, this is going to seem odd because I'm going the opposite end.
Okay.
My first pick this week is X-Men, Worst X-Man Ever, number 1. Writer is Robbie Thompson. Penciler is Ariel Olvetti. If I mispronounced it, come on the show and correct us, please. Bailey Hoskins has just discovered he's a mutant. For someone who's never been special, never stood out, discovering he's gifted is truly a gift. Entry into the halls of Xavier School of the Gifted Children and into the ranks of the most famous X-Men. Unfortunately, Bailey may just be the worst X-Man ever. Max Bemis, frontman of the band Say Anything, kicks off his first Marvel miniseries by teaming up with stellar artist Michael Walsh to bring us the story of a misfit among misfits. Okay, this is totally different. So who's writing this? Is it Max Bemis or is it Robbie Thompson? And who's the artist? Is it Ariel or is it Michael Walsh?
Hmm.
I mean, is it me or is it conflicting here?
This sounds a little mixed up.
Worst intern ever. So let's move on to our number two picks.
Okay, my number two is a number five, Angela, Queen of Hell. The writer is Marguerite Bennett, and the writers are Aaron Kim, Jacinto, and Stephanie Hans. The ferocious finale of The Conquest of Hell as Angela and Sarah clash at last with the tyrannical Queen Hella in all her glory. Holy cow, are we glad comics don't have special effects budgets? Marguerite Oates, Kim, Stephanie, and Israel, so many drinks. And the splash page you've all been waiting for.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, my number two is written by CM Punk and Colin Bunn, possible future guest Colin Bunn. not saying, but saying. Drax number four. The penciler, Scott Hepburn. Drax faces Fang Foom. The fiend kidnapped children and put their little hands to work digging. But for what? Prepared to be shocked and awed? Drax is ready to punch out an escape route, barring any weird mystical surprises. FYI, we consider a dragon in hot pants to be pretty normal. So what could weird possibly even mean? Things that make you go, what? So, final picks of the week.
My final pick is a number four, Daredevil number four. Writer is Charles Soule. Penciler is Ron Garney. Facing roadblocks at every turn, ADA Matt Murdock struggles to build a case against the duplicitous founder of the Church of the Sheltering Hands, Ten Fingers, who's not so secretly amassing power in Chinatown. Meanwhile, Daredevil continue fight against the villain is stuck at a stalemate with his back against the ropes. The man without fear seeks help from the most seasoned superhero he knows, Steve Rogers.
Works for me.
Daredevil and Steve Rogers, that's gonna be a great book. I'm good.
But I think I could possibly top that with my last pick.
Okay.
The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, number five.
There you go. You win.
Oh, wait. I haven't even gotten to the solicit yet. writer is Ryan North. Penciler is Erica Henderson. Squirrel Girl has been sent back in time to the 60s. Didn't we kind of see this with the 70s with Deadpool? Yeah, but
maybe.
So, which would be fine, I guess, except now the future is ruled by Dr. Doom. This is why Marvel needs the Fantastic Four back, just for Doom. Anyway, that's not her fault, but she's still fixing it because she's just that good. The final battle between Dr. Doom, Squirrel Girl, and an old lady version, a Squirrel Girl from the future. Yes, meet the sensational character find of 2016, an old lady. Fun fact, besides adults literally fighting each other, this issue also features several jokes. Don't miss the hit comic featured on Entertainment Weekly's Must List, which was several months ago for everyone reading this, but it was just yesterday when this text was being written, and we're all still very excited about it. So, just tells you how far back all this is taken care of beforehand. and I think it's interesting. I was watching Comic Book Men on Sunday after The Walking Dead, and Stan Lee was on there, and apparently spent his time at the Secret Stash. And this guy brought in, what do you want to do? I think he was buying a Fantastic Four issue.
Okay.
And he gave an interesting tidbit about Dr. Doom. Dr. Doom's not a villain because, as Stan Lee put it, when was it a crime to want to rule the world? What's the crime being broken? Because he's power hungry?
Okay, true. Maybe not a crime to rule the world, but once you put that plan into action, you know, at the cost of, you know, trampling on the freedoms of other people, you know.
Possibly. But yeah, I mean, check out his this past the Valentine's Day episode of Comic Book Man.
Okay,
I think you'll find it interesting.
Cool.
So, and some more insight from Stan Lee.
Although there's one other thing, he did bilk Luke Cage out of a fee. So you know, there's that too.
Yeah, that's true.
He Luke Cage went to Latveria to get his money, and you know. Okay, maybe that wasn't a crime, but do you really want Luke Cage after you because you owe him money?
No.
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 So.
So that's gonna wrap it up for this week.
All right.
Any final thoughts?
No, just got a lot of comic reading to do.
Yep. So, well, until next week, Jarvis, if you would, please.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Nope, just time to go dark. So I think James Gunn nailed it when he's, you know, with his whole tirade about, oh, everyone else is now going to try and duplicate. And then Fox just proves him right by going, oh, we're going to do Wolverine rated R.
Right. And, you know, I don't understand why they, you know, you're okay, you're movie guys, but you're businessmen. You should be able to see the reason for the success is not because of what the property is. It's because it was a quality story.
Yeah, but it all comes down to the money.
Yeah, it does.
So they're seeing the success of Deadpool, and they're going to go, oh, we're going to duplicate it. It's just like now any space film that's going to come out, they're going to duplicate.
I mean, right.
Blade Runner 2 has been announced that it's coming out in 2018. How much of that's going to be an influence of Star Wars, Force Awakens, and Rogue One?
See, that's just going to... I can't wait for Rogue One, but I just hope that they don't buy into... They just need to still be their own thing.